Some of you had more success with the vagaries of traffic than others. And we have 10 minutes aside on this case. How much rebuttal time would you like to save, counsel?
3 minutes, please.
All right. Proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Cassandra Stamm, and I'm counsel for the appellant, Jesse Fuller, in this matter. Mr. Fuller is appealing his conviction on 2 counts of rape of a child in the first degree, and his appeal is based primarily on 2 very serious and compounding errors that occurred in the trial court. The first has to do with the state's argument, which culminated in the repeated statement to the jury that in a case like this, it's simple. If you believe the alleged victim when she tells you what her father did, you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt. On the heels of that argument, and secondly, the trial court took the unusual and disfavored step of allowing a transcript of the crucial alleged victim's trial testimony in whole to be reread to the jury during their deliberations.
Let me ask you about the second point first. What more could the judge have done in your mind to have prevented this from being prejudicial?
Assuming that the court was going to let them hear it anyways.
Well, is it your position that the law prohibits this?
It's my position that the law discourages this in almost every situation.
So if it's not prohibited and merely discouraged, how did the trial court fall short?
In two ways, Your Honor. The first is in replaying the testimony at all. If the court looks...
Well, that's the prohibition, so try another one.
Well, part of the problem here is the repetition. The repetition in and of itself is a problem because it unduly emphasizes that testimony, and that's been discussed in the cases that we've cited. The other part of the problem here is that the jury is left during this critical phase of their deliberations without guidance as to how it is they're supposed to evaluate this testimony in light of all the rest. There is no instruction to this jury, for example, that the reading of the transcript should not serve as a substitute for their memory. So in this case, what we have the state arguing when this issue comes up in the trial court is that the jury should hear the rereading of the transcript potentially for the first time. What the state is arguing is that the jury has somehow missed this testimony when it was offered.
Wasn't that the nature of the jury's question? The jury, it didn't say a juror miss, you know, we have 2 jurors that have different beliefs about what they heard. We want it clarified. They didn't say one juror didn't hear it. It's a, we had trouble hearing.
Right. So we don't know what they heard and what they didn't hear the first time around. We also don't know what they were able to pick up in terms of nonverbal cues the first time around with what they heard or didn't hear. And so now what we're giving them in this circumstance where potentially they didn't hear it at all the first time is a complete and total substitute for that testimony during their deliberations, a substitute that is different from what they originally received consistent with all of the rules of due process that apply when this witness testified. It's different.
Isn't your argument that this should never happen then? I mean, what we're wrestling with is the Supreme Court has already said there are some times when this is okay. Here are concerns about safeguards. What case is it okay? What is the rule for deciding when it's okay?
Well, I think the rule would have to be based on the facts of the case, the facts of the whole case.
So not hearing the testimony wouldn't fall within the that's okay part?
Not necessarily, and especially not in a case like this, where there is no physical evidence, where the testimony in the case is of a crucial witness. The crucial witness is how the trial court described this.
Well, isn't it unlikely that the jury would ask to rehear the testimony of a collateral witness?
I don't know. I mean, I assume if they didn't hear it, maybe they would ask.
Why wasn't the audibility, or however we want to characterize it, of the witness dealt with at the time the witness testified?
I don't know the answer to that question. Certainly, it seems that that's what should have happened here. But I don't think that the court fixes the problem by bringing in a law clerk to read from a transcript to give the jurors, in effect, a substitute. And that's one of the dangers, one of the dangers that the court has talked about in these cases. That
you're writing the test in one paragraph for future trial judges on when they can have testimony read to the jury and when they can't. What's that test say?
I think that the test starts by saying that this is disfavored in every circumstance and that the trial court must weigh the very obvious danger of unduly emphasizing one witness's testimony to the detriment of the rest of the evidence in the case before allowing such a readback, and that the court should be careful in all circumstances to ensure that the reread transcript or replayed or whatever it is, whatever procedure the court is using, should not serve as a substitute for the collective memory of the jury and should not take the place of the assessment of the credibility of those witnesses. And that's what the court has said previously in cases like Montgomery.
So there was no objection at trial.
There was an objection to the
readback. What was the basis of the objection at trial?
The very things that I'm talking about, that it would unduly emphasize the testimony of this one witness to the detriment of the rest of the evidence in the case, which I think in this case is particularly concerning given the state's argument. The state has just argued to the jury, the only thing that matters is, did you believe this witness? And it's on the heels of that that the jury says, we'd like to hear that witness again, please. And the court, in effect, says, all right, I'll let you do that.
So it's an evidentiary issue that we review for abuse of discretion?
It is reviewed for abuse of discretion, Your Honor. But the only case in this jurisdiction that has upheld that issue on that standard is Morganson, and in that case, Division 2 hung that finding on the proper precautions that the trial court took that were not taken in this case. Two of those being that the court didn't play the testimony of one witness, they played all of the testimony, and the second was that that jury was instructed that the jury should consider the witness's manner while testifying and that this information would not be available with the replay.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kristen Relier, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, representing the state of Washington. This court should affirm Mr. Fuller's conviction for two reasons. First, because this is the rare case where the trial court properly exercised its discretion to allow the readback of the victim's testimony. And second, because Mr. Fuller received a fair trial free of prosecution.
Address the two deficiencies. Counsel just suggested that there wasn't a playback of all of the evidence and there wasn't appropriate instruction.
Yes, I'd be happy to. Regarding the first point, there actually was a playback of all of the victim's statements. Here, I think it's important.
That's not what she's saying. She's saying a playback of all of the testimony of all of the witnesses, so one of them isn't highlighted.
Well, I can't say that the facts of Morganson are right at my fingertips, but I don't think it would ever be appropriate to replay every witness's testimony or to read back the transcript of every witness's testimony. The point that I was trying to make here is that we know that the jury considered the victim's trial testimony in the context of the cell phone videos where the victim initially disclosed, as well as the forensic interview, because the jury asked for all three of those things. That was the entirety of the victim's statements about the sexual abuse in this case. And the risk of undue emphasis that the general rule is about, disfavoring reading back testimony because of this concern of undue emphasis, doesn't exist here, because we know that this jury was concerned about and considered all of the victim statements in full, trial testimony, cell phone videos, and the forensic interview. regarding the
cell phone videos were played back, or you're saying transcripts of the cell phone video?
The cell phone video, there were two, and both clips were played back for the jury at their request during deliberations. That was one of their questions, as well as the forensic interview. That's another thing that the jury asked for. So my point is that there is not a risk of undue emphasis on the trial testimony when here the jury considered the sum of the victim's statements. Regarding the second point in Morganson about the jury instruction, here Mr. Fuller has waived any sort of instructional error claim, because I want to correct a factual inaccuracy in the reply brief in that Mr. Fuller objected to the idea of the victim's trial testimony being read back. But when confronted with the state's proposed instruction, which was WPIC 4.74, and it's clear in the record if you go to 8 RP 338, from the trial court's comments as well as defense counsel's comments, that they had the state's proposed WPIC 4.74 in front of them, and defense counsel did not take any objections to the language that was there. So
did he propose any, he or she propose any other instructions that were not given?
No, he did not. Not with regard to this specific issue.
Well, to any issue relating to reading back the testimony?
No, he did not. So it's too late to complain now that the jury should have been instructed in various ways. I would also just like to point out and answer a question that Judge Trickey, that you asked. Here, the trial court and the prosecutor did everything possible to try and amplify this six-year-old girl's voice. She had just turned 6 years old. The prosecutor got a microphone. When that wasn't enough, the prosecutor went and got a microphone stand to put the microphone up and get the victim a little bit closer to it. And then when that still wasn't enough, the prosecutor adjusted the chair upward. In a 30-page transcript, that's how long the victim's trial testimony is, she was asked 14 times to speak up or to repeat herself. That's pretty much every other page. It's clear and undeniable that everybody had a hard time hearing this little girl, and that the trial court and the prosecutor did everything they could to amplify her voice. But unfortunately, she was just hard to hear. If I could turn quickly to the
Can I ask you a question before you turn to that? If everyone was having a hard time hearing the witness, I assume that includes the court reporter. How reliable is the transcript?
I believe the transcript is reliable because very early on in the victim's testimony, the court reporter said she couldn't hear the victim. And so I believe, based off of that, that if the court reporter had continued to not be able to hear the victim, the court reporter would have said something.
Did counsel for the state and the defendant have an opportunity to review the transcript before it was read back to the jury?
Yes, they did. And that was one of the five safeguards that the trial court here took. The trial court ordered a full transcript of the victim's testimony and made sure that the court reporter provided it to both parties so that they had an opportunity to review it and to correct any errors. Second, the court arranged for a neutral reader, another judge's bailiff, an adult male, to read the transcript. Third, ordered the testimony read once in full. Fourth, did not provide the jury with a copy of the transcript, either in the box or back in the jury room. And fifth, instructed the jury in accordance with WPIC 4.74, which told the jury that the trial court was not commenting on the evidence, told the jury that the trial court was not saying anything about its weight or value, and reminded the jury that when they resumed deliberations to consider all of the evidence. Here, the trial court did everything possible to minimize the risk of undue emphasis.
I know you want to move on, but I have one other question. What if the inquiry from the jury had just been, we would like to rehear the victim's testimony, period, and not given a reason why? Would that be a different case?
I think it would be.
And how so?
Because here in the jury note, they clearly said they had a very hard time hearing this victim. That those were their words, a very hard time hearing her.
Well, if there was no statement by the jury that they had had a hard time saying, should they have followed the same procedure in the absence of any statement from the jury about being unable to hear the witness?
Possibly, if we still had this record of 14 times of the victim being asked to speak up or to repeat herself, getting the microphone stand, adjusting the chair. If we didn't have that, then it might be more concerning. But that's not our case.
Some of the case law has been quite critical of replaying video of the testimony because it gives you a chance to see the witness again. I know the point's made that for completeness, the video from the phone was played, but is that not a problem under the current case law, that replaying the video actually cuts the other way?
Well, these are thorny issues. It cuts both ways in terms of the video and being able to see the witness and their manner of testimony.
But if their issue was we had trouble hearing her testimony, then playing the rest of the evidence wasn't responsive to their question. It was perhaps cautious, but did it introduce a new kind of problem?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time. Are you asking, would it have been okay to have played a videotape of the victim?
No, the phone. Wasn't the phone a video?
Yes.
Not an audio?
Yes.
And you said that was played back to the jury as well?
Right, because that was an admitted exhibit.
Okay. But the request was they had trouble hearing her testimony.
Right.
Why should the video from the phone have been played in response to the jury's question?
Because, I apologize, because it's an admitted exhibit, and the jury is told that they can consider the exhibits that have been admitted for trial. It was only played back once. The prosecutor told them that they could see it again if they wanted to, and they clearly...
But that was a separate question from the jury's question of the transcript?
Yes, it was.
It wasn't briefed in that fashion.
Yes.
I don't remember the allegation that the video was a problem in terms of prejudice here.
Exactly. That was not it. I dropped a footnote in my brief that Mr. Fuller had not raised any claims of error regarding the replaying of the forensic interview video and the cell phone video. But that was
the
second
question.
The
only issue we have before us is the reading of the transcript to the jury.
Yes.
There, right?
Yes. And if I could just briefly speak to that point about having a substitute read the testimony, because I do think that's an interesting and
I'd like you to explain why believing her testimony satisfied all the elements of the crime, because that was a broad statement.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that direction. Regarding the prosecutorial misconduct, here the prosecutor properly argued that if you believe the victim, if you believe her allegations of sexual abuse, then you should find the defendant guilty. And that is consistent with the statute and the case law. This is not Smiley, which is the case that's cited in the reply brief. Smiley is distinguishable in a few very important ways. In Smiley, the prosecutor essentially told the jury that if you don't convict the defendant, then you can't convict any child abusers. That's obviously improper. The prosecutor cannot encourage the jury to credit the victim's testimony and convict the defendant based on the potential impact to other cases and the criminal justice system as a whole. There was no hint of that here.
Did her testimony satisfy all the elements of the crime, or was it an overstatement that believing her was enough?
It did satisfy all the elements of the crime, yes.
That's your position?
Right. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to pick up on the suggestion that there was no hint of improper argument in closing in this case. What the prosecutor in this case actually said, and I'm quoting from the argument, is the law concerning this kind of case and this kind of crime notably does not require the state to prove the specific date. And that makes sense, doesn't it? Because what child could or would keep track of dates? Particularly in a case like this, where the abuse is systematic, where it happened in much the same way in the same place. The state goes on and on with this theme, talking about testimony as evidence. Testimony can be just as powerful as DNA, forensic evidence, medical evidence. And that makes sense, doesn't it? Because these kinds of crimes are committed in secrecy. The person that commits these kinds of crimes goes to great lengths to make sure there aren't eyewitnesses or evidence. These crimes don't leave marks or injuries that can be seen. It's only the child. So make no mistake about it. If you listened to the child and you believed her, that is enough in this case for you to find the defendant guilty.
And what was the deficiency in the child's testimony in terms of satisfying the elements of the crime as charged?
Well, one of the things that she said is that the crime, when she was 4 years old, she said the crime happened 5 years ago. that's an obvious problem in terms of establishing a timeline here. She's asked at one point, when was the last time? And she says, the next time you go to the store was the last time. She makes other statements that are hard to understand at the very least. She talks about the language she uses is sucking butts. And the prosecutor theory is that that means oral sex. And so she asks the child, did it go in your mouth? And the child says no. In one statement, the child says that she rubbed butts in the bedroom. And in other statements, including her trial testimony, the child says that didn't happen, that nothing ever happened in the bedroom. So there's a lot here that makes that testimony not necessarily sufficient. Even if you believe parts of it or think you understand what some parts of it mean. And this argument where the prosecutor is focusing on this kind of case as if the due process requirements are somehow different here is very much improper. It's the kind of improper argument that was made about date rape cases in Fleming, and it's the kind of improper argument that this court said should not have been made in Smiley. Smiley wasn't reversed. It was a similar case where there was no objection by defense counsel, and in that case, the court said we're not going to reverse under these circumstances because defense counsel picked it up in closing. That absolutely did not happen here.
Thank you, counsel. All right, if we have counsel